Welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have two guests. I can even count up to two. Isn't that awesome? We have Robin Rosencrantz and Michael Glover.
Yes, indeed.
You said it well.
Yay! Awesome. Welcome to the show. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing great. Very, very nice to be on your show.
Yeah, it's our first Canadian show.
Yes, wow. I am Canadian. We got to have more Canadians. We're all happy up here, so don't be afraid.
Right? We need more of you in America.
We do. Why don't you come down here? We'll trade.
I don't know. Maybe when we get a little bit further with the COVID straightened out, I promise I'll come visit again. So you guys are a team, obviously. You guys have worked. I want to start right at the beginning. Where is the origin of the name, the Blue Gorilla?
Well, that's a good question, Bright Blue Gorilla. Well, for a long, long time, Michael and I played as musicians under our own names, Robin Rosencrantz, Michael Glover, which was kind of serious and kind of boring. So I'm like, we have to come up with a name that's fun, that people will remember. And I had seen the movie Gorillas in the Mist. So I had gorillas on my mind.
I thought it was the book you were reading.
Well, I read the book too. Yeah. But so I came up with Blue Gorilla.
And I said, that sounds like a depressed gorilla. So I said, Bright Blue Gorilla. Wow, our first collaboration.
And it's stuck ever since.
Yeah, it's stuck. And it's been a good lucky name for us. For 30 years now, we've been Bright Blue Gorilla.
Yeah.
So before we even get to your film, I just want to continue with this for us. Did you guys tour as Bright Blue Gorilla everywhere you go?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we still do. And what we do is now we're doing cinemas mostly, you know, when we tour. It used to just be music clubs because we were a band first, and then we got into making feature films. And 36 Husbands is our seventh feature film. So we've been doing this for quite a while, the cinema tours.
Yeah, so we go to an art house cinema, and we play a set of music. And then we watch the film with the audience, do a Q&A after. And sometimes we're in music clubs, you know, sometimes at festivals. But sometimes we even do pop-up screenings in people's living rooms.
Yeah, we did. In this last tour, we did in a garage. A guy's...
Oh, in Denmark.
Yeah, Denmark. His father owned a big, like a auto repair garage kind of looking thing. It was huge. We set up a big screen in there. He invited the neighborhood, and we had a great little screening.
It was very cozy. And we travel with a high-end projector. And then they either put up a screen or we put it on the wall. And it's really fun.
So I forgot to introduce your film. 36 Husbands is the film. It's your seventh feature. Now we know we got that out of the way. Just so people coming in late. Not that you can come in late in a podcast, but you never know. So you guys tour around Denmark and this showing your films and singing.
Yeah, basically everywhere. I mean, we've so far with 36 Husbands, we've toured in throughout Australia, in Denmark, UK, Germany. We were in Paris,
Netherlands.
We were in the Netherlands. We were in Italy. No, with the previous film.
The previous film, but a lot in Europe, and we travel by train when we tour in Europe, which is really fun.
Yeah,
for
it's nice. We don't drive.
LA people used to being in our cars all the time.
Much nicer to be on a train,
right? We've been to India. We haven't been to Canada yet, though. We're due for a Canadian tour.
No, we keep going up there, but they keep turning us back.
No, he's kidding.
We've never tried. No, gorillas, you can't come.
But our movies are released in Canada, but we just haven't toured there yet. So when the COVID is lifted, we're ready to rock.
We'll get
Canada.
Our injections. We're not afraid of injections.
So I'm gonna. Now you're gonna get a good question here. So I know you filmed in five different countries.
We filmed in Australia.
Australia, Paris, Frankfurt, Dortmund, Berlin, LA.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. It's a spy movie.
Were you showing your other films at the same time you were filming this?
No, we don't. We don't tour and film at the same time because it's too much. You know, because it's like one. Because filming, you know, we have a team of almost 300 people by the time we count everyone up. And so it's a big project. And touring is also all consuming. So they're two very different things. But before we started shooting 36 Husbands, we were actually in Australia. Finishing a tour with the previous film, Mr. Rodolfo's Jubilee. So we were finishing a film for the first month we were there, we finished.
I think we toured for 2 months of Australia. And then basically Michael and I said, it was our first tour of Australia, 2018. And we said, you know what? Since we're touring Australia, why don't we shoot some of the new movie there? Let's get our actors from Europe to come over and meet us. And while we're touring with Mr. Rodopoulos Jubilee, we'll location scout for 36 Husbands. So everywhere we played a, you know, a concert and showed Mr. Rodopoulos Jubilee in Australia, we asked people, hey, do you know anybody that owns a sheep station? Hey, we're looking for this. We're looking for that. Can we shoot in your backyard? Yeah,
whatever we need for a film. Because, you know, these are what we call artist collective films. We actually create an artist collective and everybody is sort of a percentage player in the movie release. And so, because we don't, you know, unfortunately, we're not rich kids. We basically make, you know, a couple hundred bucks a show. That's the kind of our touring life. And so we can't make a movie on that in the normal way. So what we need is a lot of donations, people saying, yeah, you can shoot in my barbershop. Yeah, you can shoot in my, you know, bowling alley, whatever. And then whatever we have, I write a scene for it usually. They say, oh, we've got a sheep farm. Okay, let me write a scene with a sheep farm. You know, a sheep, what do they call them? Sheep station.
Yeah, but it's amazing because, you know, as producer, Michael writes and directs, I produce. I tell him, write the script that you're dreaming of, and we will find a way to make some version of it.
Some version.
Right? But 36 Husbands, he came up with a castle, snake, an old Land Rover, a sheep station. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a lot of stuff to find.
There's a lot of castles.
But we found it all. And we just ask. We ask everybody we know, do you know anybody that has a castle? Do you know anybody that has a sheep station? And really, and somehow we find our location.
It's funny how that works. You know, we do workshops sometimes as well for like creative how to do stuff workshops in music schools and film schools. And it's amazing once you figure out what you're looking for, if you start telling everybody clearly what you're looking for, no matter how ridiculous it is, it's almost an infallible universal law that you'll find it. It's weird. You can be looking for a 1938 Indian motorcycle with a sidecar that's rusty, but that's green paint or some real obscure thing. And if you just start telling people, you're going to find it. It's really weird how that is.
It's a miracle.
So I want to get back to the script writing. So you've written your script somewhat, or is it all, do you have the ending and the beginning?
It's all written beforehand. When we shoot, we're very traditional in that sense. There's not really improvisation on the sets, except where we're doing montage. Sometimes I will say, oh, do this, you know, because montage is like silent movie gags usually. And so, because, you know, you got a song playing and then you're showing some passage of time with people doing stuff. So I'll do a little bit of improv, but usually it's all very scripted. And I'm also an editor. I used to work for the Osbournes television show as one of the editors. I was the lowly dailies editor, but that's where I learned to cut, and I learned editing from some of those editors who became friends. And it's very classic editing. When you're editing, you want the same take. You want the same lines said a different way, but the same lines in six different takes. You don't want an actor to say something different the third time. Because, you know, that might be the best take, but then he didn't get the line you needed. He didn't mention the word sheep or something, which was setting up a joke the next page. So that's why it's written out very carefully, and we get good actors that are easy to feel fresh with each read.
Right, but I'd say, Simon, where maybe there is a little improv, so Michael writes the script, and then we're looking for locations, and let's say we couldn't find... You know, like one of our movies was supposed to have a moped, a guy delivering pizza on a moped. And then we realized, you know what? It's too expensive to rent one. We don't know anybody that has one. Let's change it to a bicycle. Let's have him deliver pizza on a bicycle. And it made the story more interesting.
Yeah, because there was a chase scene in the movie with Mafia and the motorcycle. But then we turned it to the bicycle. It was even funnier because then he had to figure out how do you outrun a car on a bicycle? So,
so that's where the improv comes in.
Written. Beforehand, what I will do is if we get a great location and they say, oh, they'll let us shoot. Like, for example, there was the NASA and the Australian Space Agency have a telescope array there, a satellite array. Giant, you know, it's 100, not 100 miles, but it's like 7-8 miles wide. It's giant with all these giant satellites. And they allowed the shooting there, which was a miraculous thing unto itself. So I wrote a scene for that, for the picture. So when I get a new opportunity, then we'll adjust the writing to affect the locations.
Now, how much do you depend on your cast? I mean, you're making your cast go from different locations constantly and around the world. Like, how do you get that organized? Like, that's a lot of work. Usually indie film is one location, maybe 2 to 5 at the most on one continent, not 5 different places. All
logistics. Yeah.
No, that's a great question. Robin does that. That's well, Robin, and we made this 36 Husbands a little bit different because some of our other films were more in one location or two locations. And we said, you know what, this time, since we want so many locations, let's get a core team of actors to travel around the world with us. And when they're not on camera, they are also going to be our crew. That was the key. So these wonderful European actors from, you know, Italy, Germany, Ireland, we said, hey, you guys, because they all had some crew experience. How do you feel about when you're not an actor? How do you feel about getting behind the camera when Michael and I are on camera or holding a light or doing your own hair and makeup or helping us build props? So that's how
because what I've noticed over the past 10 years is that more and more actors are learning how to make their own movies because they have to, because there's not that much work and they have to have new stuff to show. And so they're becoming like little mini cinematographers and mini directors.
Movie studios, right?
Yeah, and so I thought, well, I don't use that because, you know, these are artist collective films. It's not like a big, rich company, you know, owning everything. It's like a bunch of people that don't really have money figuring out how they're going to get a Land Rover scene and who's going to shoot it. So I thought, well, we started noticing, like, for Mr. Rodolfo's Jubilee, we met a woman named Krista Posh, who's one of our leading ladies in 36 Husbands. And she's actually a director, and she's an assistant director and a producer. She does a lot of stuff, and she's an incredibly well-trained actress. And so she acted with us in Rodolfo and also was my first AD, my assistant director. And I thought, she's great. She's not only a terrific actress, but she really knows her stuff. So that gave me the idea for 36. I thought, why don't we do that with like four people, the four main actors? Let's find people that have production experience and know how to do it. And
that are willing to do what it takes and have a great attitude. Yeah. Like, that's the most important thing, especially in independent film. You know, you can't throw money at the problem. So you got to find people that are there because they love it and they believe in it. And if you get people with the right attitude that are willing to work hard and are willing to also have fun on set, then it's just a beautiful experience. It's like a big family. Everybody's inspired. We're working really hard, but we're having fun. And they're willing to do what it takes.
So how do you know? I mean, you're musicians, you're filming your movie, and you guys are playing along a lot. I would say you have musical accompaniment. How do you know, or have you decided before you even film the scene, we're going to do this song? Or do you ever at the last minute change your mind?
Well, again, it's all very planned out because by the time you get, you know, like some of the scenes, we had 70 people on set. Yes. By the time you get 70 people in a location, you have the thing from 8 o'clock to 4 o'clock, you can't mess around. So you have to know way beforehand what is going to work, what is not going to work, and what you're going to do. So all the songs in 36 Husbands were written in the script, and the lyrics were all laid out. We you know, I knew the beats and the melodies and the timing of it, because on 36 Husbands, all the spies and the bad guys are watching the Bright Blue Gorilla show on television. And for some reason, why are they watching it? And that's part of one of the little side jokes inside the movie is that our lyrics and everything have something to do with the story, and they're an important part of the story. So that's, in this case, it was not so hard to figure out. The nice thing about, as musicians, writing for picture, it's really fun for movies because you have, I like what they call source music, meaning like Hitchcock did that a lot. There's not a score necessarily. Sometimes there is, but it's like the car drives past a bar slowly and you hear the bar band playing as they go by. You know, or they walk by and there's mariachis playing because there's a wedding. It's like source music. And I like that effect mostly. So yeah, we get to do all different styles of music you know, for all the a jukebox or an elevator has cheesy elevator music. It's really fun to.
So we get to do one. Muzak versions of our Bright Blue Gorilla songs.
Yeah, we had a band playing Bright Blue Gorilla songs in a real loungy way in this film. So
maybe I'll ask a question differently. Is the script come first or does the music come first? I presume the script music would come second. Or do you have the song you've never played? Like, oh, that'll work. We'll use that here.
It's for 36 Husbands, it was definitely the script and music at the same time. Because I knew the way that I write scripts is I once I figure out what the story is in general, I put the scenes on little index cards and then I put them on a wall, you know, to decide the arrangement of it and where my arc is and all that stuff. And also the songs were part of it. And I also knew that, oh, I wanted the song about radiation here. I want the song about being in hell. I'm here, and, you know, the various songs. So that gave me some notes on it.
But then when we're recording it, we might play with the melody a little bit or, you know, change it a little bit. But once Michael writes the lyrics as part of the script, it's pretty set.
It's usually, for me, it's usually the tempo of it, you know, the tempo and the feel of it that I really work out. Melodically, Robin helps a lot with that and helps move it around.
Well, I find you lead your script a lot of time into your songs. Like, I know a song is coming, at least in this film, because I haven't seen your other ones, that you set me up, and I know it's coming. And it's funny. After a while, I was wanting the song. Okay, song's coming. Where is it? Just got to wait for it to start. And I kind of like that. Was that your plan for the viewer to feel that?
I was going by feel, and maybe you and I have the same kind of aesthetic.
It works for me.
Yeah, I was going like, it feels like we need a song here, you know. So that was kind of how, yeah.
Nobody ever said that before. I love that, Simon, that
we've heard it from audiences that they were glad that they felt that the music was like a breath, you know, they could take a breath.
Yeah, and I think it's almost like a reset for me. Basically, I'm like, okay, it's a song break. But then I'm thinking, wait, this song's got more. It took me a while, I would say, and I think the viewers got to learn. The song's played much more in this film than you think. But you don't know that till the end. Because at the beginning, I'm kind of like, why are these songs here?
Yeah.
Right. They're clicking.
When we're doing the cinema shows, we tell the audience before, we say, hey, by the way, there's somebody up on stage that looks quite a lot like us. And when they play a song, there's a reason for it. So
pay
listen
attention
to the lyrics.
To the lyrics.
So we tell people. So
it's part of the story.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right?
I do want to emphasize one thing. You make your lead character, Gina, run a ton.
That's right.
Yeah. She run, Gina, run.
Now, how many times did you make her run? I really would like to know, because you made her run to the beginning for a long time. That is one quality run.
Right? She's actually a runner.
No, she's
Michael wrote that as part of the script, knowing she would be in good enough shape to pull it off.
Yeah, see, the thing is, I'm fortunate because I work with a lot of the same people over and over, and we've worked with Gina for 5 movies now. And I know what she can do and what she has trouble with and what she wants to do. And, you know, so, and I knew I'm going to use her running because she's really a good runner. She runs every day. She's all out runner. And I said, why don't we go to Paris and you run all over Paris and you run up the stairs at Montmartre? You know, there's like 1,000 steps, you know, thing. And she said, yeah, do it. And I said, okay, you got to train. I don't want you jogging. You're running flat out. So she trained for that. And we literally spent 2 days literally running around Paris.
But Simon, it was summertime in Paris.
105 degrees.
And it was so hot. And poor Gina. But she pulled it off. And like I said, we pick people that will go the extra mile and do what it takes. And she's got a great attitude. You know, you ask her to do anything. If it's midnight, she'll still do it.
Yeah, she can work 18 hours and still be in a good mood. Her real name is Roberta Bianchini, but we call her Gina.
She's Italian.
She doesn't like us calling her Roberta because she doesn't like the way I say it. Roberta. So I say Roberta because I'm an American.
So we nicknamed her Gina from one of our other films, and the name stuck. So we actually really do call her Gina in real life.
Oh, that's funny. I had no idea. I do like the run at the end, watching the studios, 13, 12. I'm like, oh, my God, she really is going to run the whole thing. I thought that was quite cute. I also
That was guerrilla shooting in L.A. After all.
I did notice. I wasn't going to say, but you did play with the billboard behind you. That was definitely CGI billboard.
Yeah, that would have cost us about $75,000 to a real billboard there.
I'm glad you caught that.
I was like, that's cute. I want to get to your use of colors. I mean, people can't see you in this interview, but I want to say you guys are very brightly dressed. And I find that throughout your film that each character seems to have a very distinct costuming. Gina's always bright. Every shot, she's bright. And so I know you had a costume coordinator. So let's discuss that.
Yeah,
we have
a great one. Yeah.
How much time did you spend on your costumes? Because they all have a different look. Distinct.
A lot of time. It's mainly our costume designer is an Italian woman named Beatrice Paola Ruffini. And she actually won an award in London for our previous film, Mr. Adolfo's Jubilee, for best costume. So she's a terrific. She's really good at a couple of things. First of all, she very short woman, but a little even shorter than Robin.
Shorter than me, and I'm 5'1".
Yeah, but she carries a chihuahua around constantly, and she's either on the phone with the other hand, or she's telling people what to do with the other hand. So she's great at finding deals. And also solving problems and getting in places. Like if we were in Berlin one time and there was quite a busy restaurant we wanted to go in and it looked packed and we're like, oh, we're never going to get in. She says, wait here. She goes in, comes out.
I'm kind of producer.
She comes out a couple seconds later, waves to us like, come on. You know, we go and we're like, how did you get this? She said, I have my ways. You know, I don't know what she does.
Right. But what's cool, she has a place in Italy and Berlin. And in those places, she has tons of costumes and clothes that she's collected over the years. So we'll send our actors to her apartment, to her or her studio, and they'll do fittings. And then she'll send us a bunch of photos and say, no, that works. That doesn't work.
It's quite a long process.
It's a lot of work. But I was going to say, honey.
It's important for the film to have that. Because a lot of, if you're doing low budget, no budget stuff, you a lot of times they're like, oh, we have an apartment with a beige wall and a guy in a t-shirt. It's like, that doesn't look like cinema. So when you take the extra mile and you have, like you noticed, like you have 85 sets, you know, you don't have two sets, you have 85 locations and you have a beautiful wardrobe that is suitable for the characters, et cetera. And that's really helps it lift it up.
Too. Right. But one last Beatrice story. So we said, you know, we need wedding dresses for the montage.
Yeah.
But we're like, hey, we don't have much of a budget. So she even went to wedding stores, seeing if somebody would give a free dress. You know, she didn't find anything. She finally went to a secondhand clothes store, a thrift store in Berlin, and took Gina with her and got a wedding dress that fit.
All three?
Well, it fit all three ladies, all leading ladies. So they shared the same dress. And then Beatrice was able to take the wedding dress back to the store at the end and get half the money back.
Nice. That's my kind of filmmaking.
That's indie filmmaking.
That's indie filmmaking right there. I'd be perturbed. Who made the meatloaf? I always wanted to discuss because it's supposed to be a great recipe, I'm told.
That is a good question. Well, Sharon it was vegetarian because we're vegetarians.
We wanted to be able to eat it after.
So we do vegetarian catering on set. We mostly do it ourselves. And like Michael said, because of budget, we said, well, let's make a vegetarian meatloaf. You know, Dominic Anglim, our Irish actor, and Sharon, our Australian volunteer who flew all the way from Australia to Berlin to help us. That's another story. They figured out how to make a vegetarian meatloaf. And when we were done with the scene, we ate it after.
It was good.
It was really good. It was made from lentils.
Yeah, I think they had to make two of them because one was we called meatloaf and one was crazy meatloaf. And I don't want to say why, but if you watch the film, you'll see where the crazy meatloaf comes in.
Oh, I got it. Okay. So hang on. You had somebody fly all the way, and you're not going to let that one go, all the way from Australia to Berlin just to help you guys out? That's amazing.
This was an interesting story because we were, like we said, 2018, we're touring around Australia with Mr. Adolfo's Jubilee. And every single show, I'd say to the audience, we're going to be shooting a movie in Australia in about a month. We need volunteers. If you want to help on set, we need help with, you know, photos, catering, whatever. Send me an email. So I got an email from Sharon. She had seen one of our shows and loved it and said, hey, I want to volunteer on set. I'm free. I'm traveling around Australia for a year in my van. You know, I want to come help you guys. Great. So she met us in Australia. She spent 2 weeks with us living in her van.
And she's a good photographer, which is very helpful. And she's also very handy with everything and a great cook. And her attitude is perfect. So
right. So we loved her. We all got along. The actors loved her. And at the end of the 2 weeks in Australia, we said, Sharon, we're going to miss you. We wish you could come spend the summer in Berlin and help us in Berlin. She said, I want to come. And she found a way to fly to Berlin and spent 2 months in Berlin.
Yeah, it was great. Too bad she didn't come to L.A., but we had her for almost 3 months.
Right,
great.
But these are the amazing people we meet around the world. With all our traveling, we meet amazing people everywhere we go.
It's really a
fun... And we say, come help us. Let's create art together.
It's a fun environment, you know, because you're working with really pretty... I mean, we're careful with who we pick. We really pick people that are fairly grounded and have good attitudes. You know, they're not real moody people. Because some actors are very good, but then they're very difficult to be around in between. I mean, that comes. Because in order to have such a thin skin that you can cry on command or you know, go from zero to... Sometimes it creates a little trouble. So, but not every actor is like that, but there are some. And those are ones we sometimes work with anyway, but we certainly don't make them a part of the daily crew. Those would be like our special guests that come in because they're really intense or they're really good at this or that, but they're a little bit more difficult to be around. So as far as the daily people, I tell you, there's nothing like having decent, funny, relaxed, supportive people around you, you know, day in and day out. And that's what Sharon experienced. That's why she said, I don't want to leave this. This is great. So then she got to be with us for 3 months. It was so fun.
That was cool.
Okay. Your characters tend to use a lot of the same move, the karate chop. Was there any other move designed, or is that was always going to be that one chop?
Oh no, that one you're talking about is an energy technique. We actually had one of our actors who played the bad guy. I don't want to give it away, but he was in the bad guy section. He's also, his name is Felix Kossa, and he is a kung fu master. He's a German guy, but he lived in China for 10 years with the Shaolin monks. He studied with the Shaolin monks, just like the TV show Kung Fu, you know, those Shaolin guys. So he learned really high level kung fu, including a lot of energy techniques, like that one where you knock somebody out by hitting their medulla. It's actually, you send energy through your hand if you're really good at it. It's almost like an electric shock you give to someone. It's a high technique. So that was one of them. He choreographed the whole film with my oversight because I wanted it to be amusing and funny and nothing like bone-breakingly violent. I wanted mostly grasp holds, you know, lock holds and twists and flips and things like that that were fun to look at, but that weren't going to didn't look like they broke your arm in three pieces.
Right. And our actresses, the three of them, our leading ladies live in Berlin and Felix lives in Berlin. So they trained for almost a year with him because none of them had ever done kung fu.
They were working so hard. And Krista, our main actress, the place, the boss, the boss of the three, she called me one night because they were training so hard. She called me one night and she said, Michael, this is freaking me out. I'm getting so aggressive. I was just on the subway and there was five shady looking guys and I was thinking how I could knock them all out, you know? And so I was like, okay, Krista, let's have that talk now. You're an actress. You're not really a kung fu master yet. Yeah.
That's funny. That's really good. Do you guys, so you pretty much work with the same cast every film?
Whenever possible, if there are people that I love working with, which are most of them, then I always say, hey, I'm writing a new picture. Are you available next summer? Are you available in the fall?
And he writes the part for them.
Yeah, if they
really
say,
nice.
Yeah, actually, I'm not doing anything. I don't have anything yet. Then I'll say, okay, well, I'd like you to do this thing. I don't audition people usually because, you know, I know what they can do. And also in Europe, when they train as actors, they get a lot of training. An American now, this sounds very funny, maybe to an American's ear, but in America, you can say you're an actor because you took a weekend workshop, you know? Well, you really, seriously. And so,
especially in LA,
but in Germany, if you say you're an actor, it's like, seriously, they do like 10 years of stuff and they can do this and this and this and this and this. They can cry and you know, they can do everything. So it's kind of nice when you're working with really well-trained people. It makes it faster.
Okay, I do have one last question, and then we'll get to the fun questions, I promise. How is working with CGI? Do you really like doing it, or you just feel you have to do it?
I avoided it wherever possible. The only parts in the film that are CGI is in the Bright Blue Gorilla TV show.
Yep.
Because they're supposed to be cheesy because it's like a funky, like, it's a very kitsch television show that's not supposed to be real. It's very fakey. And so that's fine. But for anything that's supposed to be real, I really don't do CG. So because we to do it properly, it's a very expensive deal. And doing it on the cheap, it never quite looks right. So we just picked it. And I think you'll probably agree that it fit with the Bright Blue Gorilla TV show, right? I mean, because you're watching on the screen. It's a TV show. So that kind of thing. But CG can be – the stuff they're doing now is amazing, and it's they're true artists. But that is a different league than what we're doing. We're just doing – shoot it, act it, edit it.
Keep it simple.
Why was there not a GoFundMe to be the gorilla?
What was the question?
Wait, you broke up a little. Say it again.
Sorry, you have a blue gorilla in the background. I thought there should be a GoFundMe or a Patreon or something so you can play the gorilla. That was just all I was saying.
Well, that's a good idea. Yeah, maybe. Hey, for the next, you sound like a Hollywood producer. Listen, kid.
I just got it. I'll
tell it.
Sounds
okay. Good. Well, that gorilla suit, you're talking about a scene where there was a big dance scene with a lot of dancing going
dancing
on.
Dancing banana, dancing gorilla.
Okay, we had a guy in a gorilla suit dancing in a bright blue gorilla suit. But here's the problem. Again, it was 103 degrees in Berlin, no air conditioning.
Summertime.
And this poor one of the guys in the gorilla suit was from Denmark, one of our assistant directors. And Danish people don't do well with heat. You know, it snows and icy up there. They're not big, they're not Southern California. So it was he was like almost dying in that thing. We had to be real careful with him, make sure he didn't overheat. So we had a tag team. The gorilla, the person inside the gorilla suit changes several times during the
That's during the Okay, we're moving on to fun questions. Because your first time on the show, I won't ask you this one again, I promise. I need each of your favorite film, or if it's the same film, you can just blurt it out.
Oh, God, that's really difficult because I love so many things from the 1930s, 1940s.
Well, while you're thinking, I'll just say, since it's almost Christmas time, Hanukkah time, that time of year, It's a Wonderful Life. No matter how many times I see it, I cry, I laugh, I love it.
That's a good one, yeah. Any Frank Capra stuff, any Howard Hawks stuff, Billy Wilder, Ernst Lubitsch. I'm a director kind of person. Once I find somebody that's special, I'm like, wow, how do you do that? And then I usually follow their whole thing. So I'm more of a director. I follow directors rather than just – but I love Billy Wilder. I love not a lot of modern stuff. I'm not that keen on many of the modern things. I liked it – actually, I liked it when they had the barrier of censorship that they had to figure a clever way around. I'm not saying censorship, but I'm saying that by putting that in their way, they had to say what was happening without really saying what's happening. And that really made it like high poetry to me in some of those 1930s films.
Okay, you guys are musicians. What band do you want to open for?
Anybody with a following.
That's a good question. Can we go back in time? The Beatles.
Yeah, no, I don't think. I don't think we would have survived that period, but I don't know. I really couldn't tell you, honestly. Most of the people that we like are people we know already.
Our friends, singer-songwriter friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, but if you have any suggestions, please let us know.
I thought you guys, honestly, I'd go with Herman Hermits. I think you guys would be amazing opening for Herman Hermits.
Henry VIII.
They just have fun music. You guys have great fun music. I think it would just flow as one big concert.
Yeah, yeah, that would be great.
Yay.
Okay, last question. Your favorite on-set meal? You've done 5 different cities. You've eaten anywhere you could possibly imagine.
Our favorite meal?
On-set meal.
Well, if it's not, it would have to be Italy, probably.
Italy. Yeah. Italy has the best food. And Mr. Rodolfo's Jubilee, we got to stay at a villa in the hills of Florence. And they had amazing pasta.
Yeah, there's some great stuff. Also,
makes
a lot
my
of
mouth
our,
water just to think of
a
it.
A lot of our cast and crew is Italian. And so, like I said, our costume designer. So when we go down there, we usually go with them. And that's a whole different experience. When you come as a... And I would highly recommend that you go as a regista, as a director. Go as a director in Italy because that word is particularly loaded there. It's like they think of Fellini or something when they say,
oh,
when costume does. This is my regista. They stand it straight and they offer you the best food. You know, it's very funny. Very nice.
Good. We love being musicians as well. We love free food.
Never feed a musician. They don't go away.
That's very true. Before I let you go, tell everybody where they can find 36 Husbands.
36 Husbands, they can find on iTunes, Amazon. They look at brightbluegorilla.com and they can find out where to get it.
Yeah, on brightbluegorilla.com, our website, you can check out our 7 movies and a bunch of our CDs. And we even have links where you can watch the movie.
And 36 Husbands is a lot of places. Voodoo, YouTube, rentals, iTunes, Amazon.
We've got a Vimeo link on our site. And 36 Husbands is really an uplifting film for the entire family. So you can even watch it with your kids.
Yeah, there's nothing gross in it. But if you have a reasonable sense of humor, you'll probably like it.
That's very true. I guess I got to say this first. Thank you for your time. Remain calm and share your bananas. Have a great
day. Our slogan.
You're
awesome.
Thanks, Simon.
Thanks a lot.
You asked great questions.
Okay, see you later. Bye.